Radio Prague News.
The president has met the person in the frame to be next finance minister in the first of a series of talks with ministerial candidates. All the MPs in the planned government of the Social Democrats, ANO, and the Christian Democrats have now signed a coalition agreement. And the film Burning Bush, about the aftermath of the 1969 self-immolation of Jan Palach, has received 14 Czech Lion nominations. President Miloš Zeman has held a meeting with the person in the frame to be next finance minister, Andrej Babiš of ANO, in the first of a series of talks with ministerial candidates. Speaking after Wednesday's discussion at Prague Castle, Mr. Babiš said as well as his own portfolio, the two men had discussed Martin Stropnický's nomination for Minister of Defence. The ANO chief said the president, who was stubborn, had reiterated his doubts about Mr. Stropnický's qualification for the post, but that he hoped the matter would turn out well. Mr. Zeman has also questioned the suitability of other cabinet nominees. All of the 111 deputies in the planned government of the Social Democrats, ANO, and the Christian Democrats have now signed a coalition agreement between the three. The head of the Christian Democrats deputies group, Marian Jurečka, told reporters on Wednesday. Mr. Jurečka had said on Tuesday that a number of his party's MPs had reservations about the government's policy programme, for instance in the field of healthcare. The leaders of the three parties put their signatures to the coalition deal on the 6th of January. The opposition Top 09 party and the affiliated Mayor's Group have tabled a rejection proposal against the new civil service bill in its first reading in the lower house. President Miloš Zeman has made the amendment passing in the first reading a condition for appointing a three-party coalition government. However, Top 09 have slammed the bill, which they say is only designed to ensure ANO party chief Andrej Babiš doesn't have to apply for security clearance. He's accused of having collaborated with the communist-era secret police, the STB, which, under present conditions, would rule him out of joining the cabinet. Plans to make Prague's Smetanovo-Nábřeží embankment and Malá Strana car-free, once the Tunnel Blanka goes into operation, may not now go ahead, Idnes.cz reported. Turning the embankment and Malá Strana into pedestrian-only zones would cause transport problems elsewhere in the city, according to a report commissioned by City Hall and quoted by the news site. An experiment in which Smetanovo Nábřeží, running from Charles Bridge to the National Theatre, was closed to cars for several Saturdays last autumn, led to traffic jams in other places, while tram services had to be rerouted. Hořící Kerš, or Burning Bush, by Polish director Agnieszka Holland, about the aftermath of the 1969 self-immolation of Jan Palach, has received 14 nominations for this year's Czech Lion Domestic Movie Awards. Jako Nigdy, or Like Never Before, by Zdeněk Titz, has 12 nominations. The Czech Lion Awards are voted on by the Czech Film and Television Academy. This year, the event, which is under new management, will take place at Prague's Rudolfinum on February 22nd. Dominik Lang, who is 33, has won the Czech Art Personality of the Year award. The jury selected him on the basis of two solo exhibitions he had last year, one in Vienna and one in Česká Budějovice, while they also praised his entry in the exhibition of finalists for the Jindřich Chalopecký Award. Lang is the youngest artist to win the Personality of the Year prize and the first to hold it simultaneously with the Chalopecký Award. And finally, a look at the weather. Rain and snow on Wednesday should give way to partially cloudy weather on Thursday, with temperatures expected to reach up to 4 degrees Celsius on both days. It will then drop to about zero during the day. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Daniela Lazarová. Coming up in today's programme, the Lower House is debating a controversial civil service bill that should open the way to a new government. Tennis star Tomáš Berdy has had a record success in the Australian Open, but there could be a downside. Later on in the programme, we look at the controversy over the future of the Šumava National Park.
And it also produces economic activity that's more likely to stay within the local area and produce benefits for the local people.
All that coming up, so do please stay with us. The Czech lower house is debating a bill overhauling the rules for the employment of civil servants. Its approval in a first round of debate is a condition laid down by President Zeman for appointing ANO leader Andrej Babiš minister. But the legislation has met with fierce resistance from the opposition, who warn it will end a long-standing ban preventing former communist secret police collaborators from holding government positions. Jan Richter reports.
The Czech parliament first approved a civil service bill in 2002 as a prerequisite for the country's accession to the European Union. The legislation was aimed at establishing an independent public administration immune to political pressures. But the bill was never implemented, making the Czech Republic the only EU member state without a civil service act in force. Transparency groups and anti-corruption activists have since pushed for its implementation. In fact, all the parties that won lower house seats in October's election promised to pass some version of the legislation. But the latest efforts by the lower house have a more immediate motivation. President Miloš Zeman said he would not appoint a key coalition figure as minister unless the legislation is passed in the first reading. That figure is Andrej Babiš, leader of the ANO party, who is set to become finance minister in the new government. Mr. Babiš faces allegations that in the 1990s he collaborated with the former communist secret police, the STB. The lower house began debating the legislation on Tuesday, with members of the opposition accusing their opponents of pushing the bill through just to satisfy the president. One of the most vocal opponents of the bill is Miroslav Kalousek of Topo 9.
Otvíráte Pandořinu skřínku.
You're opening a Pandora's box, paving the way for those formerly defeated in the Velvet Revolution to become the true winners. That's what they'd always wanted to achieve.
The text of the draft legislation, however, contains no provision cancelling the ban imposed on STB collaborators. That's why Mr. Babiš and others accuse the opposition of trying to derail its approval in order to prevent the formation of the new government. The ANO boss spoke to Czech radio about the issue on Wednesday.
Tak samozřejmě je to divadlo pana Kalouska a ODS, protože...
This is all a show put on by Mr. Kalousek and the Civic Democrats. I don't need any clearance. This bill was first debated in 2002, and back then Mr. Kalousek voted in favour. But today they are doing everything they can to prevent me from becoming minister. This bill has nothing to do with the screening law. That's just brainwashing. These are all lies coming from people who have stolen from the state and are now worried we will come and expose them.
The opposition argues, meanwhile, that possible additions to the bill in further debates could in fact end the ban preventing former STB collaborators from holding ministerial posts. But their efforts to prevent the bill from passing will most likely prove futile, with the coalition having a comfortable majority of 111 out of 200 MPs.
My thanks to Jan Richter for that report. Moving on now to sports. Top Czech tennis star Tomáš Berdych is playing for a place in his second Grand Slam final after getting further in the Australian Open men's singles than ever before. But Berdych's personal success could have a downside for his country, as Chris Johnston reports.
Tomáš Berdych attained a personal goal when he won through to the last four of the Australian Open's men's singles in a four-set duel with Spaniard David Ferrer. Australia was previously the missing link, and the 28-year-old can now boast that he has got to the semi-finals of all four Grand Slam tournaments. This is what he said after the match.
And yes, it was the only one I was missing, the semi-final. I did it. After, I would say, many years, and I'm very pleased with that. You know, I do have experience from the Grand Slam semifinals, so I hope I'm going to find it somewhere in my bag and going to bring it on court.
Berdych now has the opportunity to match his best ever performance on the top tennis stage and play in a Grand Slam final. He last achieved that at Wimbledon in 2010. The man now standing in Berdych's way is Swiss Stanislas Wawrinka, who overcame current Australian Open champion Novak Djokovic in a stunning five-set battle. After securing his last full place, the Czech said he would not stay up late to see that tussle. Berdych admitted that it was more or less the same to him which of the two won, as he had a similar success rate against both players. While Wawrinka is ranked one place below Berdych's seventh position in the men's singles world rankings, the Czech does not have happy memories of most recent encounters across the net. Wawrinka has won eight of those ties, compared with Berdych's five victories. Czechs will no doubt cheer on their countryman when he faces Wawrinka, but there could be a downside in his personal success. Berdych has again hinted that he might well have to reconsider whether he commits to playing for his country after the next Davis Cup tie against the Netherlands in Ostrava. After already helping the Czech team to two successive Davis Cup victories last year and in 2012, as well as his appearances over the previous decade, Berdych says he has perhaps earned a rest and should concentrate on his singles career. He clearly sees a Grand Slam title as his main ambition now. An announcement on whether Berdych will take time out from his Davis Cup duties is expected after the Dutch encounter at the start of February. Looking ahead, it's difficult to see the Czech Republic pulling off a third Davis Cup success without their best player on court.
Chris Johnston with that report. A reminder for latecomers to the programme that you're with Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it is now time to move on to our main feature of the day. The Czech Republic's biggest national park in southern Bohemia has become a battleground for those fighting over its future development. Academics and green groups this week delivered what they hope will be a decisive rebuttal to what they see as moves to open up the park to developers and loggers. Chris Johnson has more in this week's edition of Marketplace.
For the last 2 or 3 years, Šumava National Park has not grabbed the headlines for its environmental and touristic merits, but for a fight over the policies and priorities that will shape its future for decades to come. Plans to change the park's zoning rules have pitted environmentalists and academics on one side against current park management, local and regional politicians, and the Ministry of Environment on the other. Last October's parliamentary elections and moves to create a new government put the battle on hold for a few months. But the gloves are now off again, with ANO's incoming Environment Minister, Richard Brabets, expected to make a decision on Šumava's strategy by mid-year. The minister inherits two proposals to alter the fundamental laws governing the park, which runs down the southern border between Bavaria and the Czech Republic. One stems from the Environment Ministry itself, and the other from the two regions, Pilsen and South Bohemia, which Šumava straddles. Environment groups generally package them together as one destructive job lot. The degree to which these proposals weaken protection of Šumava's most valuable natural sites, currently around 13% of the park, against exploitation is disputed. What is not at issue is that the two blueprints seek to pave the way for more construction and development within the park, which, backers say, will boost the local economy and jobs. Proposals to build a ski lift within the park, aimed at attracting 130,000 users, and pave cycle paths across it, represent some of the more intrusive developments that would follow from the proposed laws, say their opponents. This week, those opponents sought to claim the economic high ground with the release of a study evaluating three options for the park's future. The first of these options is the frequently criticised course of current park management, which has included felling trees in the most protected zones to battle bark beetle infestation. Then comes the development plans covered by the two new laws, And finally, a new departure, which would see a dramatic expansion in the park's Sandsport wilderness area to cover just over half the park's almost 70,000 hectares. With expansion, it's argued that endangered species could be encouraged to expand beyond their existing fragmented core sites, and the impact of greater numbers of wilderness seekers could be diluted. The report is described as the first attempt ever to measure the social and economic benefits of the options facing Shumavar. Its flagship finding is that developing and expanding the park's wilderness features promise much greater long-term benefits for wildlife and locals than the alternatives. Ian Dickey is one of the authors of the report commissioned by the Czech Academy of Sciences Centre for Research and Global Change and works for the British-based consultancy company EFTEC. He describes some of the main findings following their presentation in Prague on Monday and says wilderness development would mean local people rather than big outside companies benefit from opportunities.
We compared the current management of the park to proposals put forward in the draft bill to allow rezoning and more bigger built development, and we found these proposals would damage the existing nature tourism, so that would reduce the benefits they might have, which would also involve a lot of temporary activity in construction and part-time work which would come from outside the area. We also compared the current management to an expanded wilderness zone and expansion of the existing nature-based tourism. It can be a win-win for the local economy and for wildlife, and it also produces economic activity that's more likely to stay within the local area and produce benefits for the local people.
Looking at the current management of the park, can you make any sort of general comments about how you found their approach?
Well, the current management faces a lot of different challenges with bark beetle, economic requirements and environmental objectives. But they're not making the most of the potential of the site because they potentially, in the wilderness area, have a unique selling point for visitors, which could be expanded and made a stronger selling point and be then the basis for environmental improvements and expanded economic activity.
The model that some of the green groups are talking about, this expanded sort of wildlife area, is that working elsewhere in Europe or in the world? And if so, where? And what real benefits have been seen from this?
Well, yeah, evidence of the global market in tourism is that tourism based around the quality of the environment is one of the fastest areas of growth. And yes, there are good examples all over Europe and elsewhere in the world of nature-based tourism being a successful economic development model. It works usually through a large number of small businesses providing services to people who visit particular locations because of their quality. But there are good examples the other side of the border in Germany from Shumava, and also examples I know of in the UK where wildlife is seen as a real asset to the local population.
What sort of examples in the UK are we talking about, and what sort of models of development have they got that maybe differ from the ones you saw in Shumava?
Well, in the Highlands of Scotland, there are environments that are not too different to Shumava, and some of the species are the same, large areas of pine forest. And we see a variety of activities for visitors, you know, outdoor recreation activities like biking, canoeing and so on, and also lots of nature watching that are really evident in the local economy, to the extent that some of the villages name themselves after the most iconic local species that attract visitors.
Through that model, you can have a sustainable local economy that works, or these areas are actually prospering?
Well, I think they're doing much better than comparable areas that don't have that unique selling point of wildlife. So, I mean, you have to compare them to what would be happening otherwise. And if you look at other parts of northern Scotland that don't have these wildlife resources, then those local economies are worse off.
Coming to this question as an outsider and not a Czech, were you actually surprised about the discussion here and the direction it seems to have taken, with two radically different standpoints and not much love lost between the people taking part?
Not that surprised, because I see these kind of challenges certainly all over Europe in the work I do. And also not surprised because the way we measure economic benefit has a bias towards single large projects. If you can say, I'm going to do one thing and it's going to produce 100 jobs, you know, it sounds great. If you can say, well, I'll do this and it will let 100 small businesses expand a little bit, it doesn't sound quite as good, but actually it might have the same impact and it might be more sustainable by not damaging the environment. So it's not surprising you get these divisions in how people might approach economic development for an area like Sumava, but we have to step back and say what is really sustainable and can we meet, you know, several objectives for the local economy and for wildlife at the same time.
How unique is Sumava as it is now? I mean, a lot of the economic development has been forestry, actually, and maybe some aspects really haven't been developed properly compared to other areas in Europe, maybe just across the border in Bavaria. Is that how you see it?
Well, it does have a unique characteristic in this potential size of a large wilderness area that's managed to allow its ecological potential to be realized. And actually, so to connect to the German side, the German side isn't a competitor, it's actually a complement, that this large area could be an improved selling point for both sides of access to this area.
And what are the sort of growth figures for this sort of ecological tourism? And who are we talking about? Who are these ecological tourists, if we could call them that?
Ecotourism has been estimated to have been 6% of the global tourism market in 2010 and predicted to grow to potentially a quarter of the global tourism market in 2020. And this growth comes from large numbers of middle-income people, particularly who have families or are older than this. And there is now a generation of people who are retired and have disposable income and increased leisure time, and they don't often want to go to huge tourist resorts with large numbers of people or undertake sort of extreme sports, but they want to experience the quality of the environment, some recreation that keeps them healthy and connect to the culture and the ecology of a local area.
The report does not brim over with figures. Its authors suggest that it basically sets the scene, and in-depth studies of how and where wildlife tourism could be developed are needed. One figure puts the total benefit of Sumava, including such factors as the carbon dioxide retention of the 80% forest cover and the potential to limit flood damage, at a massive 44 billion crowns a year. Overall, it argues that the frequently changing national park management has failed to foster local business, which could cash in sensitively from Sumava's assets and the 2 million visitors a year already drawn to its peat bogs, pine forests and lakes.
And that edition of Marketplace by Chris Johnson brings us to the end of today's programme. You will find us online at radio.cz. Please drop us a line at english@radio.cz or leave a comment on our Facebook page. From me, Daniela Lazarova, and the rest of the team, it's goodbye and thanks for joining us.